From the studios of KUSP in Santa Cruz, California, I'm Gary Shapiro, and this is From the Bookshelf. Music journalist John Bream is my guest. The longtime music critic for the Minneapolis Star Tribune, John Bream has written books about Led Zeppelin and Neil Diamond, and his latest book is Dylan, Disc by Disc, a discussion of every studio album ever from Minnesota native Bob Dylan. John Bream, welcome to From the Bookshelf.
Good to be with you, Gary.
Who, John Bream, did you have this book in mind for? Is it designed for young listeners who need a guide to the Dylan albums, or as a guide to the forever young Dylan listeners like me, who are ready to argue endlessly over all this stuff?
Yes to both questions. It can be an introduction to Dylan, or it could work for hardcore Dylan fans, or maybe just for casual Dylan fans. I mean, the point is that Bob Dylan is an artist who is much debated. Some people think he's the voice of the generation. Some people think he's an unlistenable voice, especially at this point in time. And so I got two experts together on each of the 36 studio albums, and I moderated discussions between each of them, and some of them were debates, some of them there was a lot of agreement, but some of them were a little bit contentious, too.
How did you choose the people who would discuss each record?
I made a list of critics. I went on the internet and researched professors who taught classes or teach classes on Dylan, and then I looked for music figures, artists who are fans of Dylan, familiar with Dylan, willing to go out on a limb and talk about Dylan, because not a lot of artists are necessarily willing to diss some other artists. They always treat them respectfully, but I managed to find a few people like Jason Isbell, Rodney Crowell, Questlove, some others who were not shy about saying what they thought about Bob Dylan.
Has Dylan, to your knowledge, has he seen this book? I mean, you know, there's probably more books about Dylan than there are about Abraham Lincoln, but has Dylan gotten wind of this book?
Through a third-hand source, the answer would be yes. The explanation is that there's a gentleman who's in the photo end of things art, graphic designer, who is working on another book for this book publisher on the New Barbarians, Keith Richards and Ron Wood's kind of side project from way back in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And this photographer is working on that book, and then he's working with Dylan on a tour book for Bob's upcoming tour. And Dylan got in touch with him and saying, well, I know which photographs I want to do for a tour book. And Bob hasn't done a tour, you know, program for his tours for a number of years now. And he said, well, what are those photos? And he said, well, they're in the Bream book. It's on this page, that page. And he gave him the page numbers of the photos he wanted. Somehow he got the book. Maybe he went to his local bookstore or he contacted Amazon. I don't know.
You interviewed Bob.
I have interviewed Bob, had a formal interview with him once, and then I've hung out with him several times. And, you know, when you do the interview, it's like, you know, he's always playing games, and it felt like I was back in freshman philosophy class in college. You'd ask a question, and he'd answer with a question, and you rarely got real specific answers. But if you hang out with him, he's just like a normal Minnesota guy. You can make small talk with him. You can talk about music. You can talk about sports. You can talk about weather. You can talk about other people in Minnesota. And he's very funny. He's got a great memory. And he's got a great sense of loyalty. When I see him, if he sees me, he remembers me. And he's very kind and very cordial. And he can be playful and he can be funny. And my final takeaway on Bob is, you know, he wants you to put him on a pedestal, but he doesn't want you to treat him like he's on that pedestal. So just treat him like he's a normal person, and you'll have a normal conversation with him.
Well, so John Bream, where do you, you were just describing the variety of people, the Dylan people. Where are you personally? Obviously, you admire him, or you wouldn't spend this time putting a book together.
Well, he's our homeboy here in Minnesota. I mean, he and Prince are, the two acts that have put Minnesota on the map. And by the way, I also did a book on Prince back in 1984. And I've been a Dylan admirer and a fan, you know, since I was a high school kid and probably first got introduced to him. Actually, I think my introduction probably came via Peter, Paul, and Mary blowing in the wind, and then hearing the birds do Mr. Tambourine Man and those sort of things. And then you kind of, when you were a kid and heard those songs, then you went back and, well, who wrote those songs? And, you know, sometimes on the radio they'd mention that, and then you'd go check out that strange looking guy with the curly hair that my older brother had an 8-track tape of.
8-track, the perfect way to listen to Bob Dylan.
Perfect intro to Bob Dylan, yes.
Because in the middle of each song, it clicks off and clicks on to the next. Remember how 8-tracks used to do that?
Yeah. Yeah, you probably have a few of those in the garage.
Right? So you would pick a duo, I guess, to talk. It's pretty much...
Yeah, I asked, when I found that, you know, established a list, I needed to fill 76 or 72 slots. 36 people needed 2 people for every album.
Mm-hmm.
So I asked the commentators who were interested. I said, okay, give me a list of 10 Dylan records that you would be interested in talking about. I said, it doesn't have to be your favorite Dylan record. It's the ones that you feel strongly about, ones that you have strong opinions about, and then give me 5 discs you wouldn't want to do at all. Because, you know, there's a lot of Dylan discs. No one wants to talk about the Christmas album, probably. And there's a few lesser albums, Knocked Out Loaded and a couple others, the one that's just called Dylan. I asked everyone for their lists and then sort of had to do a little matchmaking from there, which was the biggest challenge of the project. And then you would get people like Bob Christgau, you know, who calls himself the Dean of American Rock Critics because he's been doing it just about longer than anyone else. Well, he said, I only would consider doing one album, and that was New Morning. And you know what? Bob Christgau got his only choice.
So did you actually get them in person? You did them on the phone like we're doing it now, or how did it work?
I had a conference call with all of them. None mm-hmm. of them were in person. Many of the people I don't even know never met. Of the 55 contributors we ended up with, I think I knew 22 or 23 of them beforehand. So a lot of them were just cold calls. We called into numbers and just had a conversation for an hour. It was going to be an hour-long conversation. Several of them went to 2 hours, Gary, and then the one with Questlove, because he has 7 jobs, that one got cut short at about 45 minutes because they had to go film a commercial.
Hmm. Which album did Questlove talk about?
Questlove did Saved.
Yeah, oh, so that, you know, that's one of the themes, I think, of your book, is that all the records that people think are great, those records are overrated. And the bad records, those are the underrated classics.
Well, I had to go back and listen to every single record before each discussion, and I would listen to them a minimum of 3 times.
Uh-huh.
And I would say my assessment of all the records changed. Certainly the ones that were considered lesser records probably went up in stature. I mean, definitely Self-Portrait sounds better in retrospect than it did when it came out, because everyone was expecting, you know, here's the voice of our generation and the greatest songwriter, and he's doing a covers album. You know, he just gave us the short end of the deal, so we were upset. But now when you listen to it and have some perspective on his career, you understand this is a look into Bob Dylan and his taste in music and that sort of thing. And the 3 Christian albums, the so-called Christian albums,
right.
I think those sound better in retrospect than they did at the time they came out.
Right, you just mentioned Saved. And I think when Saved came out, people were angry at Bob. I'm sure there were some people who weren't, but a lot of his fans were angry with him for becoming a born-again Christian, and they thought, you know, they had all kinds of prejudices or feelings about that. And that album, Saved, which came after Slow Train Coming, was really not taken very seriously. But you take that song off that album, What Can I Do For You? And there's a harmonica part, that's probably the greatest harmonica part he ever put on record.
Actually, the musicianship on those records are quite good. You know, it was a whole different approach to using gospel backup singers and that sort of thing, different kind of musicianship than you'd heard on any Dylan record.
So that's why it's very interesting to have this disc by disc book. I applaud you for putting it together.
Well, thank you. And it was designed. I said to the editor, I said, well, this would be a bathroom book. You could take it in the bathroom and just open it up and read the chapter. You don't have to read it chronologically. You could just read one chapter. And they say, well, there is a term for that in the book business, which I did not know. It's called a dip-in book.
Mm. You just
or you can just dip in, read one chapter, and it doesn't have to be chapter 1. You could read chapter 11, and then you go back to chapter 2, and then you could go to 34. It doesn't matter. It all makes sense.
Well, you know, John Bream, I intended to dip in to Dylan disc by disc, but I didn't. As soon as I dipped into the beginning of it, I didn't dip out until I got to the end of it.
Wow, I'm impressed, Gary. Thank you.
I enjoyed it a lot. I really did. And I argued out loud with some of their conclusions.
Well, isn't that the fun part about it? No one agrees on Dylan, so you get two fans about Dylan talking back and forth about it. And then, you know, you get to some of the lesser albums and you get some pretty feisty conversations.
Yeah, some of the, my favorite songs, for instance, I Remember You from Empire Burlesque.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the people you talked to and so said, that's not a good song, that's a lesser song. And I said, you're crazy. That's a fantastic song.
Well, and to the person who was, you know, analyzing in context, you know, maybe in the context of that album, it seemed like a lesser song to him. But then you take it out of context, and maybe it becomes a greater song. Or Make You Feel My Love. I remember the two people that debated that.
Yeah.
And Garland Jeffries, who's a singer-songwriter, said it was a great song. And David Yoffe, who is a professor of humanities at Syracuse University, which is Garland Jeffries' alma mater, and David is in his early 40s and Garland's in his early 70s, you know, David called it a lesser song, a very simple song, and it kind of broke up the mood for the album. But Garland argued it's a very powerful, simple love song, and it's certainly become a hit for Garth Brooks, and other people have covered it, and Garland thought it was necessary to help break up the mood of a rather downtrodden Time Out of Mind album.
Yeah, which I happen to think is a great album. But, and there are some Dylan albums that I don't particularly care for. You mentioned Knocked Out Loaded or the Christmas album, which I've probably listened to once. What about you? What are your favorite? If you had to pick one, what's your favorite Dylan album?
Well, I always pick Blood on the Tracks for a number of reasons. One, it was written in the Twin Cities here in 1973 or 74. Bob, when his marriage was falling apart, purchased a farm outside the Twin Cities. You know, he grew up in northern Minnesota and went to college here in the Twin Cities for about a year. I don't know if he ever went to class, but he registered for classes anyway at the University of Minnesota. And so he moved back here in 73 or 74, wrote all the songs at that barn, which he's still in the farm. He still has that residence. His brother lives on the property. It's his only sibling, and Bob is there part of the year. He was spotted this summer by a couple people nearby at the 4th of July fireworks celebration in St. Michael, Minnesota, pulled up in a big RV, and then when the was time for the fireworks, got out on a lawn chair and sat down and watched the fireworks. I did not get a report, though, Gary, if he was wearing sunglasses or not, because he's often seen with sunglasses when he's out and about.
Yeah.
But you don't know if, you know, 9-something at night for 4th of July fireworks. But anyway, that album was re-recorded here. The second half of the album, 5 of the 10 songs were re-recorded in Minneapolis after it was already done in New York, because Bob's brother and he listened to it and decided, no, it was maybe a little too acoustic. They wanted to make it a little bit more intense, a little bit more rock and roll. So they re-recorded 5 of the songs over the Christmas break in 1974, but it came out in early 1975, and the people from Minneapolis were never credited. And 1975 was the year I started at the Star Tribune, so I wrote stories about that album for the Star Tribune. I wrote stories for Cream Magazine. But not only do I have a personal connection to the album, but let's face it, it's one of the greatest albums ever written and recorded about divorce.
Early one morning the sun was shining, I was laying in bed, Wondering if she'd change it all if her hair was still red. Her folks, they said our lives together sure was gonna be rough. They never did like Mama's homemade dress, Papa's bank book wasn't big enough. And I was standing on the side of the road, rain falling on my shoes, heading out for the East Coast. Lord knows I paid some dues getting through, tangled up in blue. She was married when we first met, soon to be divorced. I helped her out of a jam, I guess, but I used a little too much force. We drove that car as far as we could, abandoned it out west. Split up on the docks at night, both agreeing it was best. And she turned around to look at me as I was walking away. I heard her say over my shoulder, we'll meet again someday on the avenue.
We asked the commentators to the book to rate the Dylan albums, and everyone, you know, predicted, oh, Blonde on Blonde will win, and, you know, Highway 61 will be second, and that sort of thing. Blood on the Tracks came in second.
Hmm. What,
in our survey.
What was number one in your survey?
Blonde on Blonde, then Blood on the Tracks, number three, Highway 61, number four, Bring It All Back Home, number five, Freewheeling, six, John Wesley Harding, seven, The Times They Are Changing, eight, Basement Tapes, nine, Desire, ten, Another Side of Bob Dylan. And what came in last?
The Dylan Christmas album?
That came in third to the last. The last came Down in the Groove, and then the Outtakes album, just known as Dylan, came in second to last.
You know, that album, I happen to love Dylan's cover of Can't Help Falling in Love off of that record. And I think it's a
little tribute to Elvis.
Beautifully recorded. Somebody trashed it in your book, but I happen to think it's beautiful.
Well, isn't that what it's about? The whole thing, that some people agree and some people disagree, and we can't ever agree on Bob Dylan other than we know he's a great songwriter, but we don't always agree on what the greatest songs are or how he comes out as a singer.
Yeah, well, let's talk about his voice, John Breen. John has just written this book, or I guess compiled this book, called Bob Dylan Disc by Disc. And, you know, I happen to think that Bob Dylan, along with Elvis Presley, Frank Sinatra, Bing Crosby, Al Jolson, John Paul, George and Ringo, you know, is one of the seminal figures in popular music. And I think the thing that he contributed more than anything else, even more than as a lyricist, is by opening the door to unconventional voices, of which you could certainly say Mick Jagger and Van Morrison and Tom Waits walked through that door that Bob Dylan opened with his vocal style.
Well, lots of people walked through that door. I mean, he didn't have a traditionally pretty voice, but if you study the arc of his work over the years, he's a very skillful and artistic in his phrasing. He really knows what he's doing. He's very musical. His voice may not be pretty, but his phrasing and approach to singing is very, very musical. And you can probably appreciate that most, Gary, on the Sinatra album that he put out earlier this year. I mean, we'll admit, his voice is not pretty. It's pretty croaky. You know, it sounds like Tom Waits with a sore throat or something. And yet, if you listen to the phrasing, you listen to the air, the way things are, you know, delivered, he really knows what he's doing. He knows how to wring the emotion out of what's left of his voice.
I'm a fool to want you. I'm a fool to want you. To want a love that can't be true, a love that's there for others too. I'm a fool to hold you, such a fool to hold you, to seek a kiss not mine alone, to share a kiss that the devil has known. Time and time again I said I'd leave you, time and time again I went away. But then would come a time when I would need you, and once again, these words I had to say. I'm a fool to want you. Pity me, I need you. I know it's wrong. It must be wrong, but right or wrong, I can't get along without you. Time and time again, I said I'd leave. Time and time again I went away. But there would come a time when I would need you, and once again, these words I have to say. Take me back, I love you. Pity me, I need you. I know it's wrong, it must be wrong, but right or wrong, I can't get along without you.
Bob Dylan, Disc by Disc, the author is music journalist John Bream. John, you have an event coming up in the...
Actually down in Southern California, It's at the Grammy Museum on November 4th. We're discussing Bob Dylan as songwriter. I'll be moderating a panel. That's my job. I moderate these things. And our panelists will include Lucinda Williams, who's a Grammy winner, another Grammy winner, Dan Wilson, who's known for writing songs with Adele and the Dixie Chicks, who's also in the band Semisonic and the hit song Closing Time, and then Bob Santelli, who's the chief executive of the Grammy Museum and an author of many, many books, including books on Dylan and Woody Guthrie. So the three of them will be discussing Bob Dylan as songwriter, and I'll be moderating. And we'll be doing some book signing afterwards. So if you're in the Los Angeles area on November 4th, stop by the Grammy Museum.
As a moderator, you're not allowed to express an opinion, or you can?
I will insert my opinion in there on occasion, yes, but it's sort of being the referee and asking questions and then, you know, pushing a few buttons, and sometimes you'll throw out your opinion to spur the discussion on. So we're each going to pick our favorite Dylan song, and then we're going to all talk about them and analyze them and tear them apart. So you get some pretty famous, successful songwriters tearing apart Bob Dylan songs, which I know is a little daunting task, but I think they're going to be up to it, and you've got a couple of critics on the panel, so it'll be fun.
It's a great book, Bob Dylan, Disc by Disc, the author, John Bream. Thanks so much for making some time for From the Bookshelf.
My pleasure. Thank you, Gary.
Well, that's it for this week's From the Bookshelf. I hope you had a good time, and we'll come back and see us again next week. In the meantime, check out our podcast page at fromthebookshelf.com. You can subscribe to the podcast at iTunes, and I don't know why you haven't done that already. And you can like us on Facebook. Go do that right now. I want to thank my guest, John Bream. His new book is called Bob Dylan, Disc by Disc. From the Bookshelf is produced by Francis Venegas. I'm Gary Shapiro. See you next time.